just how to protect the environment, how to work with it in your practices and things like that. And then I said this year we also worked with students at the Pedagogical University, and it was, what was their program called? There was not a Canadian, there was not an English translation, but labor technology, but they're teaching how to, they're learning how to teach things like mechanics, how to be a mechanic, how to do carpentry, even sewing, like anything with your hands that's labor. That's how they're learning to teach. I guess I'll just dive more into the interesting stuff. Everybody's really quiet. So I'll just go into if my goals were met and how. I would say yes for all of them. First, I learned that permaculture, while still small in scale, offers city dwellers in particular an alternative way to supplement their diet. To be honest, it doesn't necessarily happen in a large scale in Cuba, and it isn't necessarily an alternative that will feed the masses at this point in time. Not saying in any way, shape, or form that it's been developed to be that. I think that it could. They just need it to be on a larger scale and have more people involved. I think even if they didn't have large-scale farms, like, I don't know, for those of you who saw Mark Shepherd's presentation, he did have a pretty big system that's not necessarily existing in Cuba. I think that it could feed the masses in the sense that if more people took up having real permaculture gardens on their property, it could feed a lot more than it does. And it does feed, it currently provides food for a lot of people. So I think it could just be increased. And then the second one, I would say, for the social aspect of social mobilization, I really learned about the way that, for one, Cubans work together. The most important thing that we did learn throughout the trip, though, is that the situation that they're in wasn't a choice. They weren't this population who decided to take the high road and develop sustainable agriculture as some sort of position of higher moral consciousness. It was forced upon them by the special period and the fall of the Soviet Union. And anybody in Cuba, regardless of now if sustainable agriculture and permaculture is their way of life, will make that known. It wasn't an easy transition, and it wasn't a conscious one. It was forced upon them. And now they have really been forced to become the masters of permaculture globally because they need it. They don't have the resources to not use it and not use sustainable agriculture. Today, although it is imposed on them by their economic situation, many in the Cuban government and citizenry work together to produce food without the use of petroleum or fertilizers, share information and new technologies and techniques freely and openly with each other, and also mutually encourage initiatives that help them in their tasks. And I also wrote, we did a lot of looking at, is this something that's just happening and is kind of a agriculture revolution of the people, or is it state-imposed because it is an authoritarian country? So I wrote, I personally believe that the social mobilization that exists in Cuba is a mixture of both Cuban society and government apparatuses. In my experience, I have noted a shared sense of struggle and survival among Cubans, as well as a government that is able to quickly implement different policies because it lacks formal political opposition. They are able to get things done a lot faster than, say, the Canadian government would. That has to do with a lot of factors, one being they don't have political opposition. They can really just, if they think something's a good idea, they can just jump in with both feet and get it done. There's one story that Fidel learned about the light bulbs that are more energy efficient?
The CFLs?
Yeah, he learned about those, and within about a month, every Cuban home had them because he just said, we need to do this, and he just mass bought them and just put them out in every home or something like that. And another thing that's an interesting example, there was a lack of cooking utensils in the Cuban kitchen. So I think everybody who's been to Cuba will see that they have a hot plate, a pressure cooker, and like a slow cooker or something like that. And that's because I think in 1998, there it was just like this rush of like this urge of the people that we need these things to cook our food. And every single Cuban home was furnished with one within a couple months. So it's just things like that where it's like, even there isn't anybody to say, maybe this is a good idea, maybe this isn't a great idea, maybe we need to slow down, but it doesn't happen. So that's another reason why things happen really quickly. So either way, many projects that would seem to take upwards of 15 years to develop in Canada are able to set roots seemingly overnight. If one is interested in Cuban mobilization as well, just looking at how the society comes together, you should really look at dealing with tropical storms and their crisis strategy. It's actually now people are trying to model it all over the world, because even if you look at Hurricane Sandy, in Cuba there was only 11 deaths. Not to say that there weren't deaths afterwards because of cholera and things like that, but in the immediate destruction there was only 11 people dead. And that's pretty impressive considering they are so impoverished. They don't have the infrastructure necessarily to have really technologically advanced ways of dealing with those situations, but they somehow do a really great job because the people, when something happens, they know what to do and they know how to work together to get it done, which is really impressive. And thirdly, although a relationship to the land is like any relationship requiring work, commitment, dedication, and cannot simply be learned in the period of 7 weeks, I have deepened my relationship to the land and feel that I now have a renewed sense of connection and task of growing food. I have here to mention the building a fence story. So, like I said earlier, when I think of farming, I think of my dad kind of in a fit of rage doing something kind of psycho, and I just kind of, I'm like, oh, I don't like that at all. but the first 2 days of building our system, I had the pleasure of building the fence with a man named Omar. And, I mean, I hadn't done, like, helped do, like, doing fence pounding or anything like that since I was, like, so was a small child, like, 10 or 12 years old with even helping in those tasks at all. But I always reflect on that moment where I was building this fence with this really quiet Cuban man, and almost the only sound he made was to giggle when I kept missing the staples with the hammer. And I kept hitting the wood, and like, and it would just take off a chunk of the wood, and then I'd be like, oh, come on, like, and I'd get frustrated. And like, he would just be kind of like shaking from the chest, and he'd have been silent the whole time, and it happened almost every single post we were at, where like, finally, like, I got to like the last staple at the top or something, and he would just be like bending over, almost cry laughing, because it was so funny that I was so terrible at it. So I always think of that, that I could rewrite that memory where I couldn't have imagined farm work happening in such beautiful tranquility and joy. And that's almost one of the best moments that I take away from that whole trip, is that I can take that away and I can think work can really be done in joy. Because previously that was not my experience with farming. I actually, spending years off the farm, I always said, I think it's a requirement on the resume for a farmer to be a little bit psycho. But I now have learned that that's not true. Are there any questions? I have a few key reflections that I wanted to just talk about in discussion if we want to get in.
What's the Bible?
Pardon me?
The word on the screen.
Oh, paciencia. Just patience. Yeah, I just like that. That was a bench in Havana. There was a community project where they went into a landfill and took out all of like, the broken tiles and plates and things like that. And they made this really beautiful park with benches, I guess, that were kind of like with murals. So they all had either they played into Cuban history or they were having to do with the environment and things like that, or just having messages on them, which is another really beautiful community project that I would have loved to see present in our system of reclaiming some tiles and making that possible.
Why do we turn ourselves into a circle and then you can share reflections and you can ask the questions?
Right. Yeah.
That'd be bumper cars.
Meep meep.
Go make the turn. Okay, so we can't take it.
Oh, it's an inter.
Here.
I actually lived in a canoe museum.
A
canoe museum. It's kind of funny. There was 14 of us, including myself and the other leader. So there were three Casa Particulares that people kind of rotated through. But since a lot of the other people had never been to Cuba before, so they had never been in the casas. They kind of wanted to know what that experience was like, but since I had already spent so much time in Cuba, I was like, I don't really, it's a fine with me. So I spent the whole 2 months living in the canoe museum, because there's also room for 7 at the foundation headquarters. So that's another part of Antonio Nunez Jimenez's history, was he was also a Cuban adventurer and explorer who took, I can't remember how many people on his expedition, but he did a enormous canoe trip down from the Caribbean into South America, and I don't remember what that river's called that kind of like dips down and goes back up and feeds back into the Caribbean, but he took enormous, like they were in enormous canoes, literally like from where Colby is to like the end of the room. They're made out of these like huge tree trunks, so I lived in the canoe museum because that was kind of like the focal point. Like,
was it your bed?
No, it wasn't my bed. But they were it was in the front room, and then in the middle was like a kitchen area, and in the back were the bedrooms. So that's where I stayed.
And then you just had a community where you made your own meals together?
The people, the staff of the foundation cooked for us three meals a day. And a lot of us would have wanted that we could have cooked for ourselves, but to be honest, given the way that the Cubans, like attaining food, anybody who's gone shopping and had to like get groceries for themselves in Cuba, it takes a long time. And I admire any Cuban woman because they have to do it almost every single day of going into markets and tracking down certain ingredients and kind of being all over the place. It takes hours a day. And we just, given how intense the program was, it was not in our capacity.
And you were able to eat
what was served? Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, it was all so good. Like they cook really healthy and use a lot of ingredients from other permaculture systems in the area. And yeah, it was really good. Any other questions?
Well, why don't we spend a few minutes, everybody just share with the neighbor what are one or two things that struck you with the presentation, and then and you can share those, and then Leah has reflections that she has on her own experience. Okay, so why doesn't everybody grab one or two neighbors and just share a few things that struck you or found particularly interesting? I'm the neighbor.
That's nice. Caterpillars that shoot acid.
I wish I would have put pictures. They were disgusting. They were literally like this big. Gross. They were so disgusting.
Slugs, except caterpillars.
Yeah, like hard shells, like little like armor shells. And one of the girls actually, because the Cubans, because that's another part of the foundation. They do so many things, but they also do like guided hikes and stuff like that, because it's trying to like get people into nature. And they told us, they're like, there are these centipedes that are on this trail that we're going to take you on. And one girl, before we got on the bus, had an anxiety attack and had to stay home because she was just like, I can't do it. She's like, I hate bugs. I don't like centipedes. And to be honest, like, she probably would have like fainted or something because they were everywhere.
Yeah, she
was. Yeah, like it was.
You guys didn't like caring.
Like, I was fine, because if you don't hit them, they're fine. There's just some parts where they're like everywhere, so it's hard to avoid them. But you can't do it. I don't know.
At least you had the ointment or whatever.
Yeah, and we just like I just wore long pants. Like, it doesn't really get through fabric, so
yeah,
it's fine.
It's fine. Just corrosive juices.
Other than the corrosive caterpillars,
oh, yes.
The part that struck me was that idea, everything is connected, transformation must be holistic. And it's like, it's not, I mean, it's not just that you're, you know, buying a... It's like you have to change your belief system about what's important and what isn't.
Yeah.
About, like, if you want to do that kind of work, like here, for example, a lot of people have to reevaluate how they spend their time. How much of their time is spent doing paid work for a company so that they can take that money then and go and,
yeah,
and use it to buy manufactured or things that have been grown a long ways away and stuff like that. There was this like a real wage assessment thing that I saw like many, many years ago, where someone comes in and they're like, okay, so you pay this much for your car and your insurance and your daycare and your, what are all the costs that it costs you to go to work? And then what are you making per hour? And then what are you actually making per hour?
Yeah.
And some people went down to like 25 cents an hour or something like that. Like that's the money that they were actually making. It, especially when there's two people working and childcare is an issue and stuff like that. So, yeah. That part
really
struck me.